Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI.
Hello and welcome. Today we're diving deep into a novel that, it basically changed everything for fiction. Gustave Flaubert's Madame Bovary.
It really did. Flaubert himself is just this towering figure in French literature. You could even say he's the architect of the modern novel.
Absolutely. His craft, his realism, it just set a completely new standard.
And Madame Bovary itself, it gives us one of the most unforgettable and frankly devastating character portraits ever written. Emma Bovary.
A doctor's wife, right, whose romantic daydreams just lead her down this terrible path. It's self-destruction, basically.
Exactly. The whole story really hinges on this huge gap, this unbridgeable chasm between Emma's incredibly vivid imagination fueled by novels and the dull, stark reality of her everyday life.
So our mission today, for you listening, is to really get under the skin of this tragedy of disillusionment.
Yeah, to understand the human cost. What happens when we chase these impossible dreams? Dreams often sold to us by, the stories our culture tells.
Whether that's 19th century romances or maybe today's Instagram feeds.
Precisely. The medium changes, the core problem maybe doesn't.
Okay, let's start with Flaubert himself, the writer. He had this almost monk-like devotion to getting the writing right.
Oh, absolutely legendary. It took him 5 years, 5 agonizing years, to write Madame Bovary.
Because he was obsessed with finding le mot juste.
The perfect word.
Yeah.
The only word for every single sentence. Imagine that level of dedication.
And all this effort was in service of something pretty radical at the time, realism.
Right. He wanted to show life as it actually was. No sugarcoating, no melodrama, no obvious moral lessons slapped on top.
Which led to his famous idea of impersonality. The author should be invisible.
Kind of like God in creation was his phrase, present everywhere. But you shouldn't see the author pulling the strings or judging the characters.
Okay, but hold on. If he's not judging Emma with her adultery and her spending, how are we supposed to react? Doesn't that detachment make it even harder hitting?
I think it does. That impartiality is the power. See, if Flaubert just lectured us about how bad Emma was, we could maybe dismiss her.
Right. Just label her immoral and move on.
Exactly. But because he steps back, we're forced into her world. We feel her boredom, her longing, her desperation, almost firsthand.
And technically, how did he do that? Keep his distance, but still give us her inner life.
Ah, that's the magic of his technique. Style indirect libre, free indirect discourse.
Okay, sounds technical, but break it down for us. What does that feel like for the reader?
It means the narration smoothly slides from the objective outside view right into Emma's thoughts and feelings, but without the usual tags like she thought or she felt.
So the narrator's voice kind of blends with the characters.
Perfectly put. One minute you're reading a description of the dull town, the next sentence adopts Emma's emotional, sometimes frantic perspective. You get this incredible psychological depth, this intimacy, but Flaubert stays, officially invisible.
That must have been pretty shocking back then. Combining that cool detachment with, let's face it, pretty scandalous subject matter, adultery, critiquing the middle class.
I was huge. Incendiary is the right word. The novel was immediately controversial.
Didn't Flaubert actually get put on trial?
He did. Him and his publisher. For offenses against public and religious morals.
What?
Because it was so frank about sex and so critical of bourgeois hypocrisy.
Wow. And what happened?
He was acquitted, thankfully. And that acquittal in 1857 wasn't just a win for him. It was a massive victory for artistic freedom in general.
So Madame Bovary wasn't just a great book. It was a landmark moment. It sort of opened the door for literature to tackle tougher, more uncomfortable truths.
Exactly. It really marks the point where French fiction steps firmly into the modern era.
Okay, so let's step into that world he created. Provincial Normandy, mid-19th century. You said it was critical of bourgeois life.
Deeply critical. And it starts, interestingly, not with Emma, but with her husband, Charles Bovary.
Tell us about Charles.
Well, he's decent, kind even, but utterly profoundly mediocre. He's a country doctor, not very bright, perfectly content with his dull routine. Flaubert establishes his ordinariness right away.
The opposite of romantic excitement, then.
The absolute opposite.
Yeah.
And enter Emma Rouault, beautiful daughter of a farmer, but crucially, her head's been filled with sentimental novels from her convent education.
Ah, the source of the dangerous dreams.
Precisely. So she marries Charles, seeing marriage itself as like the gateway to all the passion and drama she's read about.
In reality, hits hard, I assume.
Instantly. Life with Charles in the small town of Toasties is just suffocatingly dull. His habits, his conversation, even his adoration for her feels heavy, boring.
Is there a specific moment where this really crystallizes for her?
Yes, the turning point is a ball they get invited to, at a marquee chateau. It's this glimpse of aristocratic glamour, Parisian elegance. Everything she craves.
Her fantasy world made real for one night.
Exactly. She feels like she finally belongs. And then, returning to Toasties to Charles, It's a brutal come down. That memory of the ball just poisons everything else. It makes her despise her ordinary life even more.
So Charles notices she's unhappy.
He does, in his slow way. Oh. He thinks the change of scenery might help, so they move to another town, Yonville-l'Abbaye. Bigger, but still provincial.
And this is where she meets other key people.
Yes, this is where the stage is really set for her downfall. We meet Homais, the pharmacist.
Right, you mentioned him. Pompous know-it-all.
Totally.
Yeah.
Self-important, always spouting shallow enlightenment ideas, thinks he's a great intellectual. A perfect symbol of bourgeois pretension.
And the other key figure.
Monsieur Leroux.
Yeah.
The draper, the moneylender. He's cunning, charming when he needs to be, and utterly predatory. He spots Emma's desires immediately.
He sees an opportunity.
A big one. So psychologically, what's driving Emma at this point? It's this constant aching yearning mixed with a good dose of narcissism, thinking she deserves better, and this really tragic naivety about how the world actually works.
Is it pure naivety, though? Or is there a part of her that knows she's chasing illusions, but reality is just unacceptable to her? Is Flaubert maybe admiring her refusal to settle, even if it destroys her?
That's such a key tension in the book. She does have ambition, a desire for something more, something transcendent. But society gives her so few outlets.
So her only tools are shopping and affairs?
Basically, yes. Luxury goods and romance become her only ways to try and build a more exciting life. And that's the path to ruin. It's a progressive decay, not growth.
Okay, so the affairs start. Who's first?
First, there's Léon Dupuis. He's a young law clerk in Yonville. Shares her boredom and her romantic notions. They have a sort of love affair of the soul.
What up?
Initially, yes. Lots of shared sighs and meaningful glances. Talk about books and music. But he's too timid, too constrained by convention. Nothing really happens. And then he leaves for Paris to study law.
Leaving a void.
A big one. And it's filled almost immediately by Rodolphe Boulanger.
Ah, the experienced seducer.
Completely. Wealthy local landowner, older, cynical. He sees right through Emma's romantic act because he's used it himself countless times. He knows exactly what she wants to hear.
And Flaubert gives us that incredible scene at the agricultural fair, right? That sums up the whole dynamic.
It's masterful. You absolutely have to picture it. Emma and Rodolphe are up in the town hall window looking down at this local fair.
People winning awards for pigs and manure.
Exactly. And Rodolphe is leaning in, whispering these over-the-top declarations of love, pure romantic cliche into her ear. Our souls are united forever. That sort of thing.
While downstairs, someone's getting a medal for fertilizer use.
Precisely. Flaubert cuts back and forth between Rodolphe's seductive lies and the incredibly mundane, trivial speeches below. The irony is just devastating. It shows Rodolphe's manipulation and the sheer banality of the world Emma's trying to escape.
And she falls for it completely.
Hook, line, and sinker. And this affair requires money. Gifts. Clothes. She starts spending recklessly. Encouraged by Leroux, who keeps offering her credit, getting her to sign promissory notes.
The debt trap starts closing.
Yes, and she gets so swept up, she convinces Rodolphe they should run away together.
Which a cynic like Rodolphe is definitely not going to do.
Of course not. He prizes his freedom. He ditches her, very cruelly, sends her a letter full of fake regrets, hidden at the bottom of a basket of apricots he sends over.
Apricots? Seriously? That's wow.
It's peak Flaubert. The calculated insult disguised as a gift, Emma completely breaks down. A severe nervous collapse.
And while she's recovering, Charles makes things worse.
Unintentionally, yes. Homais, the pharmacist, convinces Charles to try this new experimental surgery on a local stable boy, Hippolyte, who has a club foot. Homais thinks it'll bring them fame.
Oh, no. I can see where this is going.
It's a total disaster. The surgery fails horribly, leads to gangrene. Hippolyte loses his leg. It's a public humiliation for Charles.
And for Emma, it's the final nail in the coffin for any hope that Charles might become distinguished.
Exactly. Any tiny lingering hope that he could be the hero she read about is just crushed. It really shows the tragic contrast between them.
She's destroyed by too much imagination.
And he's destroyed by too little. His love for her is real, but it's this kind of almost bovine, uncomprehending devotion. He's completely blind to her affairs, her unhappiness, the looming financial ruin.
So where does she go from here, after Rodolphe, after the surgery fiasco?
Well, the final act, the final descent, begins when Charles takes her to the opera in Rouen, hoping to cheer her up.
And who should they bump into?
Léon Dupré.
Mm-hmm.
The law clerk, back from Paris.
Ah, Léon 2.0.
Exactly. He's more confident now, more worldly. The timidity is gone. He sees Emma, the spark is reignited immediately. And this time, they act on it.
So, affair number two begins.
Yes. Emma starts inventing excuses to go to Rouen every week. The famous lie is that she's taking piano lessons.
Right. Weekly piano lessons.
Their affair in Rouen is passionate, certainly more physical than her connection with Léon 1.0. But it also becomes quite sordid. Secret hotel rooms, logistical lies, and always the need for more money to fund it.
Which brings us back to Monsieur Leroux.
Always Leroux. He's been patiently waiting, letting the debt grow. Now he starts to call it in. Ruthlessly. He knows she's trapped.
He starts seizing property.
It gets desperate. Bailiffs arrive. Everything is spiraling. Her beautiful possessions, the symbols of her fantasy life, are about to be taken away. Public ruin is imminent.
Does she try to get help from her lovers?
She does. In frantic, humiliating scenes, she begs Léon for money. Then she goes back to Rodolphe.
And they help her.
Not a chance. Both prove utterly useless. Cowardly. Léon waffles. Rodolphe flat out refuses. They enjoyed the romance, but they want no part of the real-world consequences.
So she's completely cornered. No money, no escape, total social disgrace looming.
Utterly cornered. And in her despair, she sees only one way out. One dramatic gesture left.
The arsenic.
She goes to Homais' pharmacy, manages to trick his assistant, and swallows a handful of arsenic.
And Flaubert, he doesn't romanticize this moment, does he?
Absolutely not. This is maybe his most brutal rejection of romantic illusion. Emma might have imagined a beautiful, tragic death scene like in her books.
Fading away peacefully.
No. Flaubert gives us the horrifying reality. It's a slow, agonizing, physically grotesque death. He describes the medical details with clinical precision. It's painful, ugly, and completely anti-romantic.
And that final sound she hears, the blind beggar.
Yes. This recurring figure, a grotesque beggar whose awful songs have tormented her throughout the latter part of the book. He's singing outside her window as she dies. A final intrusion of ugly reality, maybe symbolizing the corruption beneath her fantasies.
Wow. And the tragedy ripples outwards even after her death.
It does. Charles is devastated. He eventually finds her letters from Léon and Rodolphe. But instead of anger, he's just broken. Completely overcome by sorrow. She dies not long after, basically of a broken heart.
Leaving their daughter.
Berthe. Orphaned. Leroux takes everything, of course. And poor Berthe ends up having to be sent away to live with a poor aunt and work in a cotton mill.
From dreams of aristocracy to a cotton mill, that's harsh.
It's devastating.
Yeah.
And the final twist of the knife. The final irony.
Let me guess. So May, the pharmacist, does just fine.
Better than fine. He thrives. For all his mediocrity, his conformity, his endless spouting of cliches, he ends up being awarded the Legion of Honor by the government.
So the shallow, self-serving guy gets the prize, while everyone with any depth, however flawed, is destroyed.
That's Flaubert's bitter conclusion. Mediocrity triumphs.
So if we pull back, what are the big messages here? Clearly, it's about romanticism versus reality.
Absolutely. Emma is destroyed because she literally cannot reconcile the life she has with the life promised in her books. Culture creates these powerful, often damaging narratives.
And it feels like a critique of gender roles, too, right? Her options were just so limited.
Immensely so. For a woman of her class and time, what outlets were there for intelligence or ambition? Marriage, motherhood, maybe the church. Her turn to materialism and adultery, while destructive, were maybe the only forms of rebellion or agency she felt she had.
Flaubert also seems skeptical about language itself being able to capture deep feeling. There's that famous quote.
Oh, yes. Human speech is like a cracked kettle on which we tap crude rhythms for bears to dance to, while we long to make music that will melt the stars.
Wow. That sense that our words or cliches just can't express the intensity of inner life. Emma feels that constantly.
She does. Although Flaubert also shows us how even her deepest feelings can be, well, a bit theatrical. Remember that line?
Which one?
She wanted to die. But she also wanted to live in Paris.
Ah, right. Even in despair, her suffering is tied up with this fantasy of glamour, status, escape. It's not pure existential angst. It's mixed with frustrated desire for luxury.
Exactly. And Flaubert uses symbols so powerfully throughout. You mentioned the blind beggar. What about the windows?
Oh, yeah. She's always looking out of windows, isn't she?
Constantly. Gazing out, dreaming of escape. They become this potent symbol of her longing, her feeling of being trapped inside provincial life, always looking towards and imagined elsewhere.
So wrapping up, what does this novel teach us? It feels like a warning on multiple levels.
I think it shows that while society, convention, mediocrity, they can definitely suffocate the human spirit, but also unchecked romantic idealism, just pure fantasy detached from reality, can be just as destructive. It can turn our own dreams against us.
So a final thought for you, our listeners. Emma Bovary mixed up happiness with things, with luxury, with status, with dramatic romance. Her story is this devastating picture of debt, materialism, and impossible longing. How does reading it maybe challenge us, even now, to look at the stories our culture sells us about the good life, about what we're supposed to want, and what's the real price of chasing those ideals?
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.